Cheers, Bears fans! This is Bears Barroom Radio. I am Aldo Gandia, and welcome to all of the Vikings fans who are tuning in to listen to our special guest, BJ Rydell, talk about the Minnesota Vikings. Settle in, have a beer, and get ready for what I think is going to be a very informative show. I am of the belief that the NFC North is always one of the most interesting to follow in pro football because of its history, the characteristics of the four teams in the division. And as a Bears fan, it's important to stay aware of what the other teams are doing within the division. You know, these other teams you battle against for a division championship, they represent more than 37% of your schedule. And I will never forget the words of Mike Ditka, who preached to his players and to the media that you have to win the division. You have to go 6-0 or 5-1 or at worst 4-2 against these other teams. These games are huge. Unfortunately for the Bears, they have not been winning the division, and one of the reasons why is that the Vikings have turned the tables on the Bears. Back in December of 2009, the Bears beat the Vikings 36-30 in overtime at Soldier Field, and that started a six-game winning streak against the Vikings. Then from that period of 2009 to 2014, the Bears won 8 out of 10 games. Dominance the way Ditka preached it. Then in that second game of 2014, the Vikings pulled off a 13-9 win with then-rookie Teddy Bridgewater outdueling Jay Cutler. And that was that game that Cutler came back after being benched for one game, being benched for Jimmy Clausen. Ouch. Anyway, the Vikings have now gone on to win 4 of their last 5 against the Bears, and that has to stop Bears fans. But it's going to be difficult because, in my mind, the Vikings have done a very good job of fortifying their team after a disastrous 2016 season. We all know that things went downhill for the Vikings once Bridgewater went down with that fluky career-threatening injury. Adrian Peterson went down. The offensive line, which started the season talent-deficient, went through a series of injuries. And before you know it, the Vikings that started the season 5-0, they went on to lose 8 of their next 11 games. So we will learn what the Vikings have done to try and reverse their fortunes. And remember, this is a team that won the division title in 2015. So this team has a solid foundation. And just a quick programming note, we will also devote a future show to what the Lions have done in the offseason and through the draft primarily, and of course with the Packers. You got to know thy enemy, Bears fans. So let's get on to our guest, BJ Rydell, who writes for Vikings Territory and Bleacher Report and is also the co-host of the very well-produced Vikings podcast called About the Labor. He does that podcast alongside Drew Mahold. Find out how to subscribe to that show by following their Twitter account at VikingsATLPod or just head over to VikingsTerritory.com. With me now, as promised, is BJ Rydell of Vikings Territory. He is my old friend. We ran the NFC North Barroom together, and it's so good to be talking to him again. BJ, how you doing?
Oh, I'm great, Aldo. Always a pleasure to be working with you again, as you know. Happy to be here. Happy to talk some sports with you once again. It's been a while.
Thank you. Hey, listen, everybody before the draft was kind of crying about, oh, the poor Vikings, you know, they don't have their first-round draft pick and so forth. And then I start studying the Vikings draft after all the picks are on, and I say, holy cow, it looks like they never missed their first-round draft pick. You guys have to be somewhat satisfied with what general manager Rick Spielman did over there.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of people that are somewhat disappointed because Dalvin Cook was the dream there for a lot of people was Forrest Lamp. I think that it's kind of an outlandish dream to some degree. Some people still kind of give knock Spielman for not trying harder, which I think is a little bit ridiculous. But, you know, Vikings fans will be Vikings fans. Bears fans will be Bears fans. So, but as a whole, very excited about Dalvin Cook. You know, you're getting a top 15 talent, that blue chip caliber player that just had the character issues going down at FSU, which is kind of the getting himself into a bad situation and making matters worse on occasion and just finding himself on, you know, the wrong place of the newspaper, let's put it that way. That kind of led to the slide and then the medical issue with his shoulder as well. So eventually he falls down to 41, and Rick Spielman made it very clear in his press conference immediately after the selection that they had no clue that Dalvin Cook was going to be there, and that when they saw him kind of get to that 40 range, and they knew that they could move up using just a fifth-round pick, just to move up those seven slots. It was a no-brainer. And, yeah, I think the Vikings got a great successor to Adrian Peterson for sure.
Well, what does that backfield look like now? Who's back there along with Cook?
Yeah, it's an interesting situation. You're going to hear a lot of Vikings fans debate about this for sure. Dalvin Cook is obviously the one that everyone knows now. Adrian Peterson is gone. It's a new era in Minnesota. Latavius Murray obviously signed. I'm sure everyone's well aware of that. And the NFC North has been around for a while now. He's basically on a de facto one-year deal, though, where that the Vikings can get out of. And Jerick McKinnon is still there, the guy who was playing featured back for the Vikes last year, kind of got a bit of a raw deal. Given the offensive line situation and his general skill set, but he's still in there bringing a great skill set. Vikings actually still have Bishop Sankey on their roster as well, who I think I try to make note of more often than not because that's a second-round pick in Tennessee that kind of burned out quickly, which talent, physical ability. C.J. Ham is another one who's currently making the transition to fullback. So overall, there's a lot of talent on the halfback group. You see the physical skills of C.J. Ham, the explosiveness of Dalvin Cook, the ability to pass protect and catch the ball on third down from Latavius Murray, and just kind of that H-back, you know, split out wide receiver type guy, like kind of half of Christian McCaffrey's skill set is sort of what Jerick McKinnon is with a smaller body, where you can move him around alignment-wise, and he can run between the tackles, but he's better in space. So essentially, what I'm wrapping up to here is this is a very deep depth chart with a wide variety of skills.
And McKinnon is on the last year of his contract too,
right,
correct?
Right. So it's kind of a make or break situation, at least in Minnesota, for Jerick McKinnon and Latavius Murray. Those guys will be duking out because we know Dalvin Cook's going to be around. And we know the Vikings need to have a backup running back. Which guy is it going to be? It seems like Spielman and Rob Brzezinski kind of played this one perfectly, allowing McKinnon and Murray to kind of establish who is more valuable to this team this season.
I know Jose Cotto over at Bears Bar Room, he had Dalvin Cook, I think, in the top five of his draft board. He was really high.
Overall board?
Yes, his overall board. Really impressed by his quickness and the fact that he averaged 142 yards from scrimmage. The one knock on him is the 13 fumbles in college. What are the concerns there besides the fumbles and the domestic assault issues? Any right. other concerns regarding Cook?
Well, the thing about the off-field issues that people have talked about, what's interesting about that is that it doesn't extend to the field. Cook is known as a very good teammate. He's well-regarded by the guys that know him from his area, like Xavier Rhodes and Teddy Bridgewater, for example, his new teammates. So there is that. So you don't have to worry about that aspect. But the fumbling thing is a very major concern. I'm sure Vikings fans should be worried about this after the Adrian Peterson years, given how similar their skill sets kind of are and that they're the type of guys who don't want to go down and just kind of allow themselves to put the ball out there where guys like Cam Chancellor can knock it free in poor situations. So the fumbling thing is definitely something Dalvin Cook needs to figure out and figure out soon. It's been atop his to-do list. You know, a quote from him specifically is that his number one thing right now is fumbling and also pass protection. He's a very raw pass protector. Not to say he's not capable. He's got the upper body strength. He's got the ability to, you know, hit linebackers hard at the point of attack. The issue there is more technique and just general polish. If you watched him at Florida State at all, he did a lot of his stuff out of the shotgun, and just he wasn't used as a pass protector because this was a run-first team that basically revolved around Dalvin Cook's skill set, so he never really needed to develop that pass protection game. In Minnesota, though, as you saw last year, behind that offensive line, which it's retooled a little bit, and it'll be better this year, we assume. Mm-hmm. But there's still question marks there, so Dalvin Cook needs to get better in that regard if he wants to be a three-down back for the Vikings.
All right, so the Vikings find first-round talent in the second round with the 41st overall pick, Dalvin Cook. In round three, I believe that they found second-round talent with the center from Ohio State, Pat Elflin.
Yeah, I would second you there. Definite co-sign. You know, I was very excited about the Pat Elflin pick. The Vikings war room was as well. They talked about and during the press conferences that this was another guy that they spotted on their board. They didn't think he was going to reach them all the way. I think they were six picks away when they traded with Cincinnati. They didn't think he was going to make it all the way there, so they made another move up because they really liked Pat Elflein. And, you know, like you said, second-round pick type of player. This is the type of guy that I compared him to, and you're going to have to bear with me on this comparison a little bit, I compared him to Matt Khalil in the same way that when the Vikings drafted Matt Khalil in 2012, they thought they were getting a 10-year stud on the at the left tackle position. Very fundamentally sound player, just looked like a perfect blindside protector. Well, this is exactly what Pat Elflein looks like, just as a center or a right guard. So the type of value isn't there, in that he's not an offensive tackle, so obviously, you know, he's not as valuable to the Vikings as Khalil would have been had he panned out better, I guess. But he is the type of guy that you can expect to get 10 years out of, and I would imagine that the Vikings will start him at center week one. It seems like Mike Zimmer has already put him on the fast track to doing so.
Now, is he a scheme fit for what the Vikings do over there?
Yeah, I would say so, especially if he's playing center, because kind of the biggest knock on him is both being a little bit undersized and then also that kind of that lateral quickness, which you need more as a guard and especially as a tackle. But as a center, it's mitigated a little bit because there's not a whole lot of room to work there. As far as how it works with the Vikings, he's a good zone blocker, so that'll work out for Pat Shurmur's quick-hitting offense, obviously. He just needs to get in front of someone and just jack him up. That's kind of his job. And then the other thing that centers, at least that Joe Berger and John Sullivan, the centers of Vikings past, have done very well, make the line calls and help their quarterback. And Pat Elflein is the type of guy, a very, very intelligent player. Urban Meyer spoke very highly of him in that regard specifically. And that will be, you know, it's not a tangible scheme fit, but in terms of the intangible skill set and how he will work with what the Vikings like to do, his intelligence will pay off. And I would expect, again, I would expect to see him making line calls sooner rather than later because of his ability to absorb football so quickly.
And I think, you know, one of the things that I hear a lot about the guy, and in a couple of games that I saw against Ohio State, Wisconsin, and I think it was the Penn State game that I saw, is that he's a grappler. He's got an edge to him. And so I love offensive linemen like that who don't take any shit from anybody. So he could be a really good leader there for many years for you guys.
Absolutely. You know, I was kind of disappointed when the Vikings failed to get TJ Lang because I hated him so many years in Green Bay because of that mauler mentality that you kind of referenced there. And I think that they kind of got I don't want to call it a second best option because I think Elflein actually will be a better player than Lang at ultimately as he develops. But they definitely served that need, getting that mauler mentality. He calls it a switch where he's a very nice guy off the field, but when he gets on the field, he zones in and he's just kind of an asshole out there. That's just that's the type of person that Pat Elflein tries to play as on the football field, but he's also very well-spoken. The switch is very evident, let's put it that way.
Now, he figures to be an important piece to what you guys have done over there in terms of transforming the offensive line. Give us an overview of what that offensive line will look like now in 2017 with the moves that have been done in free agency as well.
Yeah, I just ran through this today, actually. The Vikings, as I currently see it, and there's still a lot of time, obviously, you know, training camp, injuries, so much still to come. But as I see it right now, there's a very real chance the Vikings will return only four offensive linemen from last year's team. The ones I think, TJ Clemmings, Rashad Hill, who had the great performance against you guys in relief of TJ Clemmings week 17 last year. Vikings fans remember him fondly. And then there was Joe Berger, who's kind of on his last limb. He's actually talked about retirement, which is what makes that Elflein pick so much greater because he has that positional versatility inside. And I'm trying to remember who the last one was, but there's one more. Oh, Alex Boone, the signing from 2 years ago, of course. So those are the four guys that I expect to return. But then you're going to see, I think you'll see Danny Isadora make the roster, the fifth-round pick out of Miami. I think that he will have, depending on what Berger's role is, if Elflein is the starter at center, I would imagine that Berger will start at right guard. Otherwise, I could see Isadora challenging for that spot because I don't see him. I think Isadora is already a more qualified player than Willie Beavers and Jeremiah Searles at the right guard spot, given that he played 39 consecutive games with the Hurricanes there and has a very athletic skill set and just good build for that that position. At the right tackle spot, Mike Remmers is kind of a question mark. Obviously, a signing from the Carolina Panthers. Most people remember him for Von Miller in the Super Bowl, absolutely mauling him on his way to an MVP award. He's not as bad as he was in that game, but he is a guy that, you know, there's a reason why he's playing right tackle. You have more security on the right side. You don't have to worry about your blind side as much. And they invested the big money in Riley Reiff, which I guess, you know, relatively speaking, in our standards, definitely big money. Offensive tackle standards, I mean, he's not getting Tyrone Smith money by any means, but I believe it's about a $10 million average annual salary for Reiff. So he's going to be the blind side protector for Sam Bradford. Zimmer's also spoken highly of his ability to run block, which has been an emphasis, which you know, as you've seen with the Cook and Elfline selection. So I would expect to see a lot more shotguns, zone blocking behind Reiff, Boone, Elfline, Berger, and Remmers would be my starting five at this point.
Well, so much of the 2017 playoff hopes rest on what happens with that offensive line.
Sure.
I will never forget what happened to this team in 2016. I predicted they were going to go into the playoffs and go and make a deep run, maybe even the Super Bowl.
We both did. We talked about it regularly. Right? They looked excellent.
They really did. And it was like a virus. Once that offensive line started to deteriorate, starting with the retirement of the right tackle,
Phil Loadholt got retired, yes, in June,
right,
and John Sullivan was released.
Exactly.
Then you see Jake Long get hurt, Matt Khalil get hurt. TJ Clemmings actually got hurt in week 17. I mean, I think it was 10 different offensive linemen, mm-hmm, and 5 different offensive tackles that were used.
Yeah, and when I say it's a virus, it obviously affect the quarterback play, running back.
Yeah, it was Western Rome.
And
you
even
know,
then the defense started to suffer as a result of it because they were out on the field so long.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that offensive line. And the offensive line coach is still there, the guy from
Tony Sperano.
Tony, yep, Sperano, because I know he got some knocks last year, so it'll be interesting. He's quite the character. I was up at Mankato,
sure,
last year and seeing him coach that offensive line. He's quite the character, has quite a presence there, so we'll see if he can transform that offensive line. All right, let's jump over to round four, pick number 109. This is a guy that our Bears Barroom draft analysts were really high on. I think the pronunciation of his first name is Jaleel Johnson,
right, yeah,
defensive tackle of Iowa. This guy, you talk about a leader and smart. This guy has gotten a lot of platitudes for being a great, smart leader for Iowa when he was there.
Yeah, Iowa seems to kind of produce those very passionate, highly intelligent, high motor guys. You think about guys like Mike Daniels in Green Bay, for example. They know how to cook up defensive linemen there. There's something in the water or something like that going on in Iowa, because Jaleel Johnson is coming out with a skill set that it needs refinement. He does most of his damage as kind of a bull rusher right now. He needs to get more creative as a three technique. But he has that interior versatility where he can kind of move over to that one tech where Linval Joseph kind of hangs out if he needs a blow. And he can also swap in and out with Tom Johnson situationally, depending on, you know, whether it's a pass rushing situation. You know, a third and 10, you're probably looking at Tom Johnson there. In a third and 4 or 5 situation where a team could pass or run, Jaleel Johnson, the bigger body, a guy that I would expect will be a big impact guy in improving the run defense from last year in the interior. That's a guy to count on for sure. And, you know, I don't see him as an immediate starter because I think Detone Jones will kind of handle the majority of the reps at that three tech spot after coming over from Green Bay and, you know, playing a position that he's actually capable of doing in Minnesota. So I see Jaleel Johnson as kind of a rotational guy immediately. But over time, I see him developing into a starter as well. So as far as I'm concerned, the Vikings got 3 guys that will probably be starting for this team, barring some catastrophic injury, which we know can happen, in probably like 2021. I would say the top 3 picks for the Vikings will all be featured guys on their offense and defense.
What do you think the future of Sharif Floyd is with Minnesota?
Oh, man, it's tragic because we just dealt with this with Teddy Bridgewater. We're still getting over it, you know, you don't know with Teddy Bridgewater, and now with Floyd, it's so up in the air, and it's just such a painful situation to really digest. You think about how hard these guys work, and I know as fans, we kind of take it for granted, but how hard these guys work to not only get to the NFL, but stay in the NFL, and then to do everything possible to get healthy, go to get your surgery. He had so many surgeries, so many, you know, knee scopes, all kinds of different stuff. And to have the surgeon accidentally, you know, kind of cut the wrong cord, because I'm not a medical professional, to put it that way. And now his career might be over. And I think that based off how the Vikings drafted, I think they were Spielman said they fielded a lot of offers at the top of the fourth round, so they were definitely set on getting Jahlil Johnson right then and there, because I think they believe that defensive tackle depth chart needed an upgrade. I think that kind of speaks to Sharif Floyd's situation to some degree. I would put it kind of in the similar territory as Teddy Bridgewater right now, where we don't know, we're hopeful, but we kind of expect the worst, I think.
They had the Vikings had another pick in the fourth round at 120, the inside linebacker from Michigan, Ben, is it Gideon?
Gideon.
Now, here's a guy who, at the combine, 27 bench presses, so he led all linebackers, and he actually tied Wisconsin's T.J. Watt for the top time in the short shuttle. So apparently he's quite the athlete. What do you know about him?
Yeah, one thing that really stood out for me when the Vikings drafted Gideon, because he was kind of he's not a very sexy pick, let's put it that way, especially with a guy like Jalen Reeves-Maybin who went to Detroit, a couple picks down the board who offers more upside and the coverage skill set as a linebacker, where Gideon is more of kind of a two-down thumper. The pick is growing on me with Gideon because I keep calling him a psychopath, and that sounds kind of it sounds rude, but I mean it, you know, in an endearing way. He's just absolutely nuts out there. He's fearless. He will, you know, he's not fearless in that he's a head down tackler, but he will go after the ball. He attacks guys sideline to sideline. And then the athleticism you talked about, very high spark player. If you're familiar with the spark stat, I know the Seattle Seahawks are very high on it. You see them drafting guys like, you know, Frank Clark, for example, who's in an interesting situation right now, but that's another high spark guy, type of athlete to kind of, if you're trying to grasp the spark ideal, I guess. So this is a very athletic player. I still am skeptical about his three down availability. I don't know if he can cover well, but there's zero doubt in my mind that this guy is going to be an immediate special teams ace on multiple coverage teams. So the value isn't great there in the fourth round as far as the special teams stud. But I do think that he can impact the game for 15 to 20 snaps if need be as a Mike linebacker, which would kind of require Eric Kendricks to kick out to the Will side. So you might see some shifting around with Gideon. There's, you know, Elijah Lee, the guy that I imagine we'll talk about later on in the show here, might have something to say about that as well. So the linebacker situation in Minnesota is something to keep an eye on if you're, you know, an NFC North guy or a Vikings fan. There's a lot of things that could really develop out of that situation, given that the Vikings spend so much time in the nickel, but they need help in the base because tight ends are destroying them over the middle. There's just a lot of stuff to figure out there, and Gideon's definitely a big part of that.
Yeah, he could provide help immediately on special teams. That seems to be a designation that some of the scouts have already given to him, that he could make the team and start and help immediately on special teams. So we move now to round five. You guys had, a couple more picks in that round, and at 170, it's the wide receiver from South Florida, Rodney Adams. I don't know much about Rodney. Tell us about him.
Very, very interesting player. The easy comp here, to simplify it for people that, you know, aren't familiar with Rodney Adams, he's a very skinny version of Cordero Patterson. Extremely, extremely raw fundamentals as a wide receiver. Very talented kick return guy. I imagine Bears will see him twice this year as a kick return man. But he's basically a gadget guy at this point in his career because he doesn't have that upper body strength to get a good push on the outside and press coverage. And at the same time, he doesn't have that kind of that giddy up to get out of the slot and make a difference as a route runner because he doesn't have that polish at this point in his career. So at this point, I would imagine that he's going to be the type of guy that comes in, steps into that kick return role that was vacated by Patterson, immediately and affect the game in that way. Otherwise, I would look for him as a decoy, a guy running strictly nine routes down the field and trying to burn guys with his 4.4 speed, or just being a gadget guy, end-around decoy type where you line him up in the slot, you fake the reverse, and you throw it over Dalvin Cook and watch him go for 80 yards. That's the type of guy I think Rodney Adams, the type of value he adds immediately to this Vikings team.
The next fifth rounder you mentioned earlier, Danny Isadora. This is
correct.
It's interesting that Spielman likes to stock up on day three offensive linemen. He picked Beavers.
It is interesting.
A year ago, T.J. Clemens a couple of years ago, Austin Shepard. So
John Sullivan. It goes all the way back to the years in the Triangle of Authority. You see guys like, I mean, Brandon Fusco was a sixth round pick out of Slippery Rock, who actually, you know, he's released, but he was panned out for a while there. Spielman's taken a lot of heat for this, for the record, in not drafting offensive linemen earlier because he's had minimal success in the medium rounds. But as far as Isadora goes, I think this is a guy that, like I said earlier, I think that he is a guy that's going to make the 53-man roster, immediately will compete for the right guard spot. I think, like I said, Joe Berger's probably going to be the guy there, assuming he's not starting at center. But Isadora has the ability to compete immediately. The one question mark I have with him is his ability to handle power. So think like a guy like D'Amata Pico, the monster nose tackle from Cincinnati, that strictly bull rushing talent that kind of clears the way for Geno Atkins there. Think of his skill set going up against a guy with kind of shorter arms, substandard strength from an interior guard spot. It's a lot to handle, especially as a rookie, so that's something to watch with Isadora. But as far as fundamentals go, as far as athleticism standards go, this guy is a starter in the NFL, and he's really got the mentality too. I actually fell in love with him immediately because one of his quotes was they asked him about playing through a rotator cuff injury or something like that in his shoulder. And he played 39 straight games for Miami, and someone asked him about the injury, and he just said, you know, if I can get out there, it's my job to play football, so I'm going to play football. And from a Vikings team that, like we talked about before, rotated in so many injured offensive linemen last year, I'd like to have a very tough guy that's, you know, he's here to play, and he's here to make money, he's here to do his job. So I immediately fell in love with the pick, and I have high expectations for him as well.
No picks in round six, and then five picks.
There was the round six pick. And don't forget about this one either, because I think this is probably the biggest steal here. Bucky Hodges, the tight end out of Virginia Tech.
I thought he was round seven, but you're absolutely right. That's round six. My bad.
No problem at all. I mean, the best part about your confusion there is that Bucky Hodges takes that personally too, because he was amped up on his initial recording, or he did a speaker phone interview with the Twin Cities media immediately after his pick, and he sounded off about sliding, believing that he was, you know, stating that he believes he's better than guys like Jake Butt, who went ahead of him. He is amped, and he is ready to go. High chip on his shoulder, reached immediately for that number 84 jersey and started talking about how he wants to fulfill it. This guy is ready to roll, and if you check out his athleticism skills, he's not a tight end. Let's not get it twisted here. He's listed as one. This is a Jimmy Graham clone. 6'6", 39-inch vertical, long arms, huge hands, and runs a 4.5. But he played basically split end essentially at Virginia Tech. He's a glorified wide receiver, and it's funny because he kind of played the exact same role as Laquon Treadwell did at Mississippi, which makes the pick all the more interesting. But watch this guy. Keep an eye on him. Vikings lost Michael Pruitt to you guys last year, and I think this is kind of the answer to that, getting the athletic tight end to match with Rudolph in two tight end sets and then using David Morgan as a pass protector specialist, kind of what Red Allison had been doing. Keep an eye on Bucky Hodges. This guy is – I think he's going to score – my guess is I think he'll score three or four touchdowns this year because I think he's a situational threat in the red zone.
Well, and I'm well aware of Hodges because I was studying tight ends this year because I figured the Bears were going to pounce on one, and Hodges was one of the guys that was very intriguing for the reasons you just mentioned. Plus, he's not a bad blocker. He blocks with intensity. He's not afraid to block.
He's got the mentality. I'm with you on that for sure, but the polish needs to come because he simply wasn't asked to do it. Right. This is a guy that basically played, like I said, an ex-wide receiver role. You know, a number one wide receiver basically in Virginia Tech's offense, where he was asked to block receivers on the outside on outside rushes, whereas, you know, I assume where you saw that mentality that I can agree with you on. But as far as inline blocking goes, he needs to learn how to set an anchor and deal with power off of the edge. You know, think about the type of guys that come from, if he lines up on the right side, think about the guys he'll have to deal with just in the NFC North. I mean, he'll see Mike Daniels. He could see Leonard Floyd, Ezekiel Ansah, assuming he's not 45 years old. He's got a lot of – there's a lot of pass rushers in just this division to deal with. So, again, a guy to definitely keep an eye on. But if he wants to become more than just a Jimmy Graham type and really develop a well-rounded skill set similar to like maybe a Kyle Rudolph, he's got a lot of work to do in that regard.
All right, so it's four picks in round seven, and it starts with Stacy Coley, the wide receiver from Miami. You know what's interesting is I'm seeing one, two, three, four four picks from the state of Florida, so the Vikings must really like their Southeast regional
ACC scout. Particularly too, right?
Yeah.
Florida State, Miami. Yeah, that's ACC is ACC and Pac-12. Mm-hmm. So the UCLA, USC, those type of schools. Those are the two divisions that I personally want, conferences that I personally watch for the Vikings, because they and then Notre Dame being a non-conference team as well, but they love Notre Dame guys. So those are little tidbit there. Those are the ones that I follow for sure.
Good to know. Now Coley is slated to compete for the slot wide receiver position. Tell us about him.
Yeah, Stacy Coley is a guy that he's grown on me as well. When I first checked out his film, I admittedly only watched two games when I did my initial evaluation, and that was below my personal standard. So I didn't get a good grasp when I saw the Vikings made the selection, but I have gone back and watched everything on this guy. And, you know, the number one thing that jumps out for me is that chip on his shoulder and kind of the swagger. There's a picture online, for example, of him flicking a guy off on the field. So, you know, he's got that kind of that pack. Maybe it might not always be intelligent passion, but he gets pumped up about the game. And it's interesting because people question his love for football, but when he's on the field, he seems to really love this game, loves making guys look silly. He's not great as a guy, not great off the line of scrimmage in terms of release, a lot because he's a smaller guy, 195 pounds, I want to say, which is why he's probably prone to being a slot guy at the NFL level, because he'll get knocked off his route in press coverage. But this is a guy that can really affect the game as a lightning in the bottle threat. I compare him loosely, let me emphasize this loosely, to DeSean Jackson, a lightning in the bottle type of guy that was he's not going to rack up 5, 6, 7, 8 catches in a game, but he's going to catch the ball. He might catch the ball once or twice for like 70 yards and a touchdown. So he's that type of player he's very electric with the ball in his hands. I think he finished at Miami fifth overall in Miami's history in receptions. That's with guys like Andre Johnson, Michael Irvin, great history of receivers down in Miami. Fifth overall, and he finished with a career receiving average of 13.2. So when the ball gets in Stacy Coley's hands, he's trying to find open space, and he's trying to make guys look silly with his quick feet.
Now, with pick number 220 in round 7, I should know how to pronounce this guy's name, given that I saw 3 or 4 Northwestern games this year. It's a
local guy for you.
Yeah, right. Ifeidi Odenigbo. Am I close?
I believe I'm still working on this one too. I believe it's Ifeidi Odenigbo.
There you go.
Or Odenigbo. Odenigbo, I think is correct.
I'm going with your pronunciation.
Rick Spielman calls him I.O.
There you go.
This guy is another guy that I didn't follow a lot ahead of the Vikings making the pick, but I went back and watched his film, particularly against C.J. Beathard in Iowa. He was destructive as a pass rusher, mm-hmm. absolutely destructive. Mm-hmm. Very well-developed sense of how to pass rush, at least at the college level, very creative. He's developing a spin move, good with his hands, quick feet, uses power and finesse kind of interchangeably to keep his guys off guards. And he switches both from the right and that left side. And I personally believe he can stand up as well. So you could see him in like a 3-4 alignment as an outside linebacker, pass rush type. But he cannot run defend. Like this guy... I try to be optimistic, but at this point in his career, I truly believe he is not even close to a professional level as a run defender. Not to say he doesn't have the talent to do so or the physical frame. He just doesn't have the awareness, the experience. I believe he was a one-year starter and kind of a situational guy at Northwestern for the most part. So he's got a lot of work to do in that regard. I see him as a practice squad guy immediately, but I love his ability to develop as a pass rush specialist. He just needs to figure out how to get to an adequate level as a run defender.
Yeah, if he sticks, it's going to be because he can pressure the quarterback. According Absolutely. To NFL.com, they say that he had a higher quarterback pressure rate than Taco Charlton, so that's saying
there you go.
Quite a bit. All right, so here's your guy, Elijah Lee, the outside linebacker. He's picked in the 7th round with the 232nd overall pick. What do you like this guy?
Okay, I love this guy. This is one of my favorite picks. Bucky Hodges is my personal favorite, but Elijah Lee is a very, very close second for me. I thought he was a 4th-round talent. This is a guy that has an extremely well-rounded skill set as a linebacker, very contemporary mold. right? So he was a three-year guy at Kansas State, probably should have stuck around for his final season. I imagine his draft stock probably would have skyrocketed over the course of this final year. That's another reason why I love his upside potential. Great coverage skills. I believe he's a converted safety. So he can go sideline to sideline both in run defense and in coverage. The questions with him are, first of all, he's got to eat some sandwiches. This guy needs to pack on about 10 or 15 pounds to really be effective at the point of attack with some of these guys that are trying to kick him out, wash him out of the play, you know, with authority. He's going to have trouble getting around blocks if he doesn't put on some weight. And also, he's got to kind of polish up his game and just knowing how to get around blocks. But he does reportedly, this is something obviously I can't quantify, but reportedly studies well, knows exactly what he's doing on the field. He's a leader, guy that, you know, told other guys where they needed to be, not just himself. So he's kind of a Mike Zimmer type because he has that moldable skill set, great range, great athleticism, great speed, both short area quickness and long speed. So he'll chase guys down. Not much of a pass rusher. So I would look for him to be kind of like Eric Kendricks, but needs to develop the polish that Kendricks had when he was coming out of UCLA. Just not a consistent tackler yet. Gets washed out of plays far too frequently. And he doesn't look like he's all the way there sometimes. And I don't think that's a lack of awareness. I think it's a recognition thing where he just kind of gets crossed up by a misdirection or something like that and just ends up on the wrong side of the field. That needs to improve. That will improve with experience too. So I see this guy as a dark horse to make the Vikings 53. I guaranteed practice squad slot, though I think the Vikings will think twice about, you know, waiving him, because I think a lot of teams will look at that skill set and think, you know, waste a roster spot on developing this talent. No doubt. So I think he's going to stick because of, you know, that upside. And for me, I was looking for a coverage linebacker, and Elijah Lee is definitely that. It's just about the weight thing for me and just becoming more consistent with his tackling.
Well, and close to being Mr. Irrelevant is Jack, what is it, Tocho?
Tocho.
He's the son of Kenyan immigrants, and he's a cornerback from NC State. What do you know about him?
He was a cornerback, press coverage guy, very physical at North Carolina State. But the report and kind of the going thing is he's being listed kind of as a defensive back right now because he's going to be taking reps as safety, particularly because he doesn't have the fluid hips. If you look at guys like Marcus Lattimore is the best example of this. The way that they flip their hips so quickly and it's so fluid, you barely even notice it. Tocho looks like he's moving in slow motion compared to those guys. That's why the move to safety very, very much suits him. Very, very physical, unbelievable ball skills. I'm telling you, if you check out this guy's film, it's hard not to find a situation where he creates an interception. Not one just falling into his lap. He creates one. There's a particular play that I love where he was one on one with Zay Jones, arguably the best route runner in this entire class. Followed him step for step and just beat him to the point of attack, stretched his arms out and snagged it away from him. That's a guy that caught about 100,000 balls at East Carolina last year in Jones. So Tocho can definitely get after it. And, you know, I really think that upside as a ball with his ball skills is there. He just needs to kind of find a niche, apply his intelligences. He's known as one of the most intelligent players, not just in the Vikings class, but just overall in this group of 2017 candidates. High awareness guy, good leader, another Mike Zimmer type, moldable skill set, probably destined for the practice squad because he has one skill, he needs to develop another one. That's what the practice squad is for.
11 draft picks. That has got to be so much fun for a guy that's a draft pick like you, right?
it's fun until you have to write about every single one of them. And it wasn't like it was spread out well either, you know? Or it was zero on the first day, two on the second day, and just a hard nine in within about an eight-hour time slot. So that wasn't a ton of fun. But looking back now, you know, talking to you about this, I love it, obviously. It's good to have a lot of guys, and I like to call them lottery tickets because I think Rick Spielman brought in a lot of guys that have the potential to make some money, but could just as easily prove to be BJ Dubois types or Stephen Weatherly or Edmund Robinson, guys that have kind of washed out over the last couple of years in Zimmer's system.
Now, with all of these draft picks, did they sign anybody as an undrafted free agent that caught your eye?
As a whole, 13 undrafted free agents plus Tommy Armstrong, the quarterback from Nebraska, is reportedly switching to safety to come to rookie camp with the team. They also brought in a Winona State quarterback who, in my opinion, has no shot to be relevant outside of training camp. So about 15 guys there. I wasn't impressed as a whole. The guy they paid the most money to, Sean Bauer from LSU, that's the guy that's going to make the headlines for a lot of, you know, national media articles because he has great length, great athleticism, and it's so easy to compare him to Neil Hunter because he's coming out of Louisiana State with that athletic skills and kind of the raw skill set. I don't see it with him. I don't see anything. I don't think his film was dreadful, in my personal opinion. So I don't think that he's as high of an upside guy. I would look more to Aviante Collins, which is an offensive tackle out of TCU. The only draft guy that I saw get this right after my review was Matt Miller at Bleacher Report. Graded him as a guard and graded him as a fifth or sixth round pick, which is where I would slot him in. Eric Wilson from Cincinnati, back Elijah Lee, because he's got the coverage skills, the small body, and then he just needs to learn how to tackle better. So kind of a clone of Elijah Lee. So you kind of get two draft picks in that regard for getting the coverage linebacker skill set. And the last one that I like that I don't think a whole lot of other people talk about, Dylan Bradley out of Southern Mississippi. Undersized three technique that has a quick first step, and I think has the ability to develop into a guy that could play a situational role for the Vikings, kind of like Tom Johnson has over the last couple of years.
Couple more questions before I let you go. What's the story at quarterback? I understand that Teddy Bridgewater's fifth-year option was not picked up. Is he going to be a Viking in a couple of years?
Dude, it's like we said before, it's so up in the air with everything with Bridgewater. But the fifth-year option was a business move. Not picking that up, strictly a business move. That has nothing to do with Teddy. I think the Vikings are playing it well from their vantage point. It kind of sucks from Teddy's because he's not going to be making great money, and he's in this tough position. But if he stays on IR all season long, I'm sure you've heard, that contract carries over to the next season. The Vikings get a whole another year of ownership over Teddy Bridgewater, which I think that's going to factor in big to, you know, in what's to come here. Because I think, you know, hypothetically, you could franchise Sam Bradford, bring back Bridgewater on that, you know, that extra year that he the toll over year, and get a real healthy, full blown head to head. Let's see who's the best competition at quarterback, probably 2 years down the road still. So I wouldn't expect to see Teddy in 2017. Sam Bradford is the guy. I would imagine that Case Keenum will somehow find his way onto the roster as well. I can see three quarterbacks again, unfortunately, with Taylor Heineke. But Teddy Bridgewater, keep an eye on this guy because I know a lot of people have kind of lost confidence in his comeback. And I try to say this without coming off biased, but this is the kind of kid that you just don't bet against. He just has that mojo. He has that special quality, just that personality, that the magnetism that he creates with the players around him. You don't bet against this guy just because I think he's capable of the impossible. So I wouldn't bet against him, but I hope he's back in purple. Let's put it that way.
Well, he's one of the good guys, and I'd love to see him continue his career in the NFL. And as long as he doesn't play well against the Bears, then I'd be very, very happy for him.
Only guy to beat you guys at Soldier Field since 2001. How about that? Bush administration. That's going back a couple of years.
I'm
going
to put in my favorite sound effect of me crying when you say that. All right, last question. So I saw a tweet of yours two or three days ago maybe that you said the national media is sleeping on the Minnesota Vikings. You kind of took a shot at them. So that means that
you... I love taking those shots.
I noticed that. So that means that you have high hopes for this Vikings team in 2017. Tell me why.
Simple answer is that the Vikings are going to be more consistent at the offensive line spot. Riley Reiff is a guy that comes in with great durability. You don't have the concerns that Matt Khalil had with the injury stuff, not knowing if he's going to get out there. Reef is going to be there out there for 16 games. You know, I guess cross your fingers, knock on wood, because I'm saying this, but 16 games for Reef will be great for Bridgewater. Just having more having an extra second just to think back there. That's important. The scheme fit with Dalvin Cook, not having to try to mesh the Adrian Peterson single back with the Sam Bradford shotgun style, getting away from that and just being more creative on offense and just not telegraphing everything you do. That will change this offense as well. And there's some explosive guys out here that I think you can. I think you'll see Rodney Adams and Stacey Coley make an impact to some degree because they are such explosive guys. Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, you know, Michael Floyd just signed today. That's a, that wide receiver group starts to look pretty dangerous from a skill set perspective, assuming they can stay healthy and stay sober. You know, I like the offense to improve to a top 15-ish type offense with. In my opinion, with Mike Zimmer's defense, I still hold strong in those first five games last year. I believe what I saw last year is something that can still be achieved, and I think it actually can be improved upon. It's just the duration. You need to be able to be more consistent about it. I think Mike Zimmer has thought long and hard about this. I expect a top five defense and a top 15 offense. I could easily see that translating to 10 or 11 wins. You know, Lions are very improved as well. It's going to be a tough division for sure. But the Vikings have a solid schedule to work with, you know, opening night against Adrian Peterson. If you can knock down a win there, that's a confidence builder moving forward. You can see some momentum strike. I like this team to win 10 or 11 games. So, you know, if the national media is not going to get it right now, I'll get it right for them and we'll correct them later.
Very good. Bears fans, I bet you can see why I like this guy so much. He knows this shit. He's passionate about football. He's a great writer, and he's my friend. His name is BJ Rydell. Follow him at VikingsTerritory.com. Where else can people follow you, BJ?
Twitter, at Robert Rydell. It's R-E-I-D-E-L-L. Vikings Territory, Bleacher Report. I do some freelance stuff for them. Twitter is really the main thing for me. So, you know, Vikings Territory and Twitter, you can find me there. I spend a lot of time there and, you know, try to pump out content to match the very high expectations that people like you have set on me with the kind compliments that you say at a frequent rate. So, you know, I hope to see some Bears fans because I love arguing with you guys, especially love getting Marsaw's goat every now and then. So, I'm open. Come get me.
You heard him, Shane Marsaw. Go after him. Go after him, Bears fans. All right, BJ, thanks very much for being on Bears Barroom. Okay, stick around, everyone. I am sending Shane Marsaw a message right now telling him that, excuse the feedback there. Telling him that BJ loves to trash talk, and let's see if Shane has a message for BJ. Let me send that out. And while we wait for Shane, I can tell you that I hope to have the entire gang next week for a show to discuss rookie training camp, get an idea of what the roster might look like, and also to delve into this Trubisky sharing reps with Mike Glennon once practice begins, because frankly, I'm just concerned about that. How are we going to develop this young quarterback and also give Mike Glennon a chance to win games, given that Ryan Pace has announced that he is the number one quarterback of this team? So I got a little anxiety about that. Maybe a talk with the guys can help me. Additionally, in a week or so, we're scheduled to talk with John Buffone. He is the nephew of Doug Buffone, and he is going to share some stories about the all-time great Chicago Bears linebacker and some tales about Doug's legendary radio rants. So that should be really, really fun to talk with John Buffone. That will be in about two or three shows from now. We're going to talk about the Packers and Lions draft, and so we've got that planned. Finally, I just want to ask you that we are posting a survey up on our Twitter and Facebook page that should be up very soon. And if you're not following us on any of those social media channels, please do so. Just search for Bears Barroom and we should pop up. This survey is important to us because we're thinking about a couple of potential projects for this upcoming season, and we need your input. So we always value your suggestions and input. This survey will give us a real strong indication of what are some of the things that you'd like us to work on. So please take about 5 or 10 minutes to fill out that survey once you've located it. And guess what? I got a response from Shane Marsaw, and he wants me to play a little piece of music and dedicate it to BJ and all of our Vikings friends and foes. So I will leave you with this piece of music and also tell you that, remember, if you drink, don't drive, and always bear down.
Love. exciting and new. Come aboard, we're expecting you. Floats back to you. Hurt anymore.